What's up, everybody? You're listening to We Need More Cowbell, a podcast about Saturday Night Live, its history, cast, best sketches, and more. I am your co-host, Maddie Pryor.
And I'm Jamie Chaffetz.
So it's been a while.
It has.
We have been mad busy. Jamie went to, go show off her movie she helped out with at the Asbury Film Festival.
And Maddie got to interview Mark Hoppus of Blink-182.
It was really cool, I'm not going to lie. It's been a fun, couple of busy weeks, but we are definitely excited to be back in the studio for today's episode.
Yeah. For sure. Today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 4, hosted by the one and only Candace Bergen, who you probably maybe know.
Murphy Brown?
Yeah, something like that. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about a super cool event we got to check out last week here at Princeton.
Right. So, current cast members. I know we very rarely get to talk about current cast members since we're so new. But so, current cast members, Melissa Villaseñor and Alex Moffitt joined senior, I think her title is senior writer. Probably Googled it, but whatever. Anna Dresden. They were really just there to talk about their time on the show, what it's like creating sketches, seeing them make it to air or not. Which it was incredibly, incredibly interesting.
Yeah. Oh, and they talked about Melissa Villaseñor's Nickelback episode.
Oh my gosh.
And we kind of learned through them talking about how they have to produce everything that they are going to be on. I didn't know that. We both didn't know that.
And so if you write a sketch, you're it. You're the producer of that sketch, which, now thinking about it, makes lots of sense.
Yeah.
But no idea beforehand.
No one would know that.
Right, because...
Yeah. So it means, Kristen Wiig came up with Target Lady?
I don't know.
She must? I don't know. Where do the writers come into play, though? They didn't answer that
That's
question.
That's a good question.
Do the writers do anything?
We'll look into that.
Yeah.
Well, let's add that to our look-into list.
Yes.
So, the event was put together in memory of Jacob Kaplan, who was a Princeton student, grade class of 2018, who neither of us had the pleasure of meeting, but by all accounts was a very funny guy, was always putting smiles on people's faces, so they wanted to do that for a night in his honor. And it was a really great event. Again, we learned so much. One thing I learned, too, I don't know if you knew that about the host dinners.
No, yeah.
Yeah, so someone from the audience questions were fabulous.
Yes.
And somebody asked the crew if they had ever been really starstruck. Mm-hmm. And so all three of these... Melissa, Alex, and Anna, we're going to address them by their first names like we're best friends.
Yes. Because we are. We met them.
Right. They all joined the cast in 2016, which was obviously a tumultuous year. Yes. But Melissa Villaseñor's immediate answer was, oh, Tom Hanks, which completely understandable. And they're oh, my gosh, yeah, no, yeah. They're oh, my gosh, it's Tom Hanks. Everyone in the world knows who he is, and he's on our show, And so Alex made the point that he's oh, that was my first host dinner. And I was what's a host dinner?
Can we know about that?
Essentially the host of every episode hosts a couple of the cast and crew for a dinner. I guess they rotate it every once in a while so everybody gets a turn. But I can't imagine that being my first host dinner. That's having Oprah. Or,
yeah.
It's crazy. It's
Gandhi.
Awesome. Tom Hanks, Gandhi. Yeah.
Gandhi from Z100. And Melissa, I'll just call her Melissa
now. Mel.
She talked about how she met Will Ferrell how he just saw her in the hallway and he was like, hey, Melissa.
Super nice.
Just hey, how's it going? And she was Will Ferrell.
He knows who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good impression.
Oh, thank you.
He knows who I am.
He knows who I am. Melissa talked a lot about her impressions. They talked about, when you do an impression, what's it like to have that person you're impersonating see it? And, Alex Moffitt, he's always doing Eric Trump, which we know he probably watches it. But it's not it doesn't put him in a super good light. So, that's one thing. But, most of Venus and yours are generally, good impressions like Lady Gaga or... I believe she did Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which wasn't, bad or... It wasn't really bad or good.
Yeah, she was... She said she made a comment, she's trying to, show appreciation to them.
Right,
and,
yeah.
She's, giving them the love, not, hating on them.
Right.
Respecting. I think she was talking about, what's her name? Natalie Portman. I don't know if this is in a YouTube video I watched after.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound familiar to me, but okay.
I think I did a little bit of Melissa Villaseñor stalking.
Additional research, yeah.
Yeah, research.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Natalie Portman was just, I didn't know I could be, actually be like, someone could impersonate me.
Oh, that's
like,
nice.
And she's like, she,
that's
that
a weird way
cool.
to think about it.
Yeah. She didn't think she had the voice for it. Like, yeah. There's a distinctive voice.
That's cool. She also talked about her Owen Wilson impersonation.
Oh, God, that was amazing.
Oh, wow. Like her, what was, yeah, they talked about,
What's not? No, that's terrible.
No, I got you. No, they also talked about how they got onto the show and the whole process of auditioning like 1,000 times. And,
yeah.
Alex and his wife had like a... like a show called, what was it called, Bill and Hill, right?
Yeah.
Or Hill and Bill, either way. And it was obviously about Bill and Hillary Clinton. And they, like, had to, like, create a musical or something? I don't know. But,
yeah.
But they talked about how they did impressions, because when you audition for SNL, you have to have an impression or two, and that was one of his, except, you know, when he was auditioning, Daryl Hammond, who now does the voice, the intros and everything, he's the announcer now, was
he
still
is?
There. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's him, not Don Pardo, once Don Pardo passed.
OMG.
Just blew your mind.
We're all learning.
But he was like, well, I'm not going to do a Bill Clinton impression when the best Bill Clinton impressionist impersonator is here. But he did it anyway, and I guess it worked out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, all in all, it was a really fun night, very funny. Yes. And then we had the pleasure for 0.2 seconds of meeting the three of them.
Yes.
We, of course, were like, oh, my gosh, we have an SNL podcast. Please listen.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm starstruck.
Yeah, yeah. We got a picture with Melissa and Alex, so we posted to the More Cowbell Pod Insta.
Yes, yeah.
Anna, we didn't get a chance to have a picture with, but she seemed very appreciative.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a super fun night. And so if any of the three of you, Melissa, Alex, or
hey,
Anna, are
we're
listening,
here.
This is your formal invitation to come back to campus and be our first guest. But we'll also come to you, like, if you like,
yeah,
want to host us at Studio 8H or anything like that.
Our family, like, a host dinner right
now. Oh, a host dinner. We can host, go to that. We'll host the dinner.
We'll host the dinner.
I can't cook, so we're going to order out.
Okay. That sounds great. I like that.
Oh, man. All right. So that was really fun. Oh, and I have to note, the last time we met, our topical first half of the episode, we talked about cast members we've met, and I forgot one. I forgot John Rudnitsky. He unfortunately wasn't on the show for very long. I could not tell you why, because he was fabulous. But my boyfriend and I saw him at Caroline's do a stand-up, and then we actually got to talk to him for like 20 minutes after the show.
Stand-up guy.
Yeah, he was super chill. I see what you did there. I had a Penn State shirt on. He said, "We are," which was great. And then he was talking about growing up in Jersey and things like that. And it turns out that he goes to the beach that I worked at for 8 summers. So he's like, "Wow,
which beach?"
Manasquan Beach.
Oh, excellent.
And he was like, "Oh, I definitely snuck onto your beach like a million times. I'm sure of it, just because of happenstance.
Yeah,
like, there's
yeah,
no
yeah.
way." And I was like, "Oh, that's funny. Great.
Yeah.
Can you give me the money?"
Yeah.
No, we didn't get that money. But anyway, so I just wanted to clarify.
Yes.
For
everyone who knows.
I want to bust those myths.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense. Okay. So, all right. So now we'll go into our per usual episode of review. Candace Bergen hosted.
Yes.
Esther Phillips was the musical guest. Mm-hmm. And it aired on November 8th, 1975. It's so yeah, it is. So Jamie says she doesn't remember half the episode.
Because I watched it last week, and I was watching it on my lunch breaks.
I know.
And, like,
no, it's fine. So if you just hear a lot of my voice, my very annoying voice, that's why for like a little bit. So the cold open was actually like kind of political for once.
Yes.
as you definitely remember. So Chevy Chase is up there. He's at like a podium with the seal of the president, except it literally says like not the president of the United States or something that. And he's trying to read off the cue cards and can't really read them. So at first I thought they were making fun of President Ford because that's all they do so far on the show. But they didn't really reference him in any sense. They were like, this is a president who can't read. And then he trips over himself and. They made a knock at Harvey Cassell, who we've mentioned before, had a show on at the same time. He kept repeating, no problem, it's no problem. So I don't know if that was a fourth thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Translation.
He'd said that he would run in the primaries even if there are none. That's got to be some sort of Ford political something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then he steps away from the podium and there's like 6 chairs and he very obviously is about to walk into them. Surprise! He falls over them and says,
"Shocker!"
Live from New York, a Saturday night.
Shocker.
As per usual. But yeah, so Jamie likes to gesture at me.
Yes, so nobody knows.
And
on
I
podcast.
Have, I am not good at reading gestures or lips or anything. So we're just gonna anyway.
I was saying, you know, your turn, my turn.
Oh,
that's what I was saying.
I get it. Now you go.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure what you remember, but well, I guess it says it right there.
Yeah.
We have notes.
All right. Woo! Saturday Night's first Saturday Night Live's first. Well, it was still Saturday Night at the time, right?
Correct.
Okay. When did they change that over? We'll find out.
Yeah.
First woman host.
Yeah.
No equal pay. B.
Nah.
She was a B at some point.
No, towards, she wasn't.
She was at the end.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Wait, was she?
Didn't she dress up as a B? Or was it?
How bad is it that it was 2 days ago? I don't remember. No, the B was
Oh, right. She and then the B was
John Belushi.
Belushi, and then Chevy Chase comes in and smacks him, and she's like, "Don't kill the B."
So, just a quick note during the intro, I watched it two or three times just to make sure. But the only not ready for primetime players they included in the intro were Garrett Morris, Lorraine Newman, Gilda Radner, and Michael O'Donoghue. Like, I don't know if something was wrong with my computer or what, but like other people are definitely in this episode,
yeah.
So I thought that was odd. But yeah, so, yeah, she got lots of applause, which was nice. And this is actually, she hosts again this season, which is
that's
crazy. Wild.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
What was she even in that? Do we know?
At the time,
she was in... We're about to get into a Garth and Kat song.
She was in the song. Not Murphy Brown yet. Let's see. This is 75. Oh, my gosh. She was in a million movies.
She was, like, the star, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day.
So, it is 75. She was in a movie called Bite the Bullet, The Wind and the Lion. But she had been at, look at, this is me. You can't see me, but I'm scrolling
that's
a lot.
Of,
yeah.
A lot of
so
movies.
She was in a lot of stuff.
Many movies.
She was famous.
Descriptive. Many.
So, yeah. There's a quick fake ad about, it's an ambassador training institute. To become an ambassador to a foreign country. So you send your money in and the name of the country you would like to be an ambassador to. And you just do it.
Put your social security number.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. You know, for the first couple seasons, they have things where you can send stuff in. And I'm really worried about the amount of people who
that
may
actually,
have done that.
Because it's a new show. They don't know what's going on.
Right. Like, this one was obviously very fake.
Right.
So they said to address it to, quote, unquote, illegal campaign contributions to this institute in Mexico City. So I'm assuming that's not put nobody to that, but like you never know.
Who actually was that?
Like kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Or kids older people. Who in 1975 they would have been old. I mean, they would have been old then and old now. So.
Just, what is it?
I don't know what I'm saying.
Okay. And then this one was interesting, the CIA one. So Dan Aykroyd is sitting at a desk, you know, with tons of files and papers everywhere. He looks real stressed. And I guess there was lots of turmoil in the CIA at the time.
Yeah.
And so Garrett Morris comes in, which, again, they keep using the people's real names in sketches, which weirds me out.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, "Hi, my name's Garrett Morris." When we're like, "What?
That's your name."
Because Dan Aykroyd doesn't use his real name.
Chevy Chase uses it. It's weird.
Yeah,
like they
it's
mix
interesting.
It up.
Yeah.
It's strange.
So Garrett Morris comes in and says, "Hey, you know, I heard that if the CIA has a file on me, I have a right to know about it." And so he starts explaining who he is and what he's done and what he hasn't done. And so, you know, Dan Aykroyd keeps asking more specific questions just to narrow it down. And says, "You know what, I can't help you. There are too many Garrett Morrises. There's no way." And then Garrett Morris leaves, and immediately as Garrett Morris leaves, he calls for a wiretap on his phone. So
he admitted to, like, selling drugs and stuff like that?
Selling drugs and, like, something like an assassination attempt, a political uprising. So he was really just pulling his leg.
Yeah. So basically, Jaws 2. This was actually...
the best.
This was pretty funny. Like, I gave it... you know, made me laugh. So they have this thing, like, where they're, like, sitting in their apartment or their house, and then, like, you get a knock on the door, and it's like,
Candygram.
Yeah.
Sounds so weird.
Yeah. And then Gilda opens the door for a telegram. It was a telegram. Shark. Yeah.
Telegram. And guess what? It's a shark.
Shark. And then Lorraine Newman opens it for a dolphin.
She's like, oh, all right. Oh, wait.
What?
I don't think we've mentioned this because it happened after our most recent podcast, but Lorraine Newman tweeted at us.
Yes!
It was very cool.
That was pretty cool.
She asked what people were listening to, reading, something like that. And we were like, oh, excuse us. Oh, no, she asked what people are watching right now.
Got it.
So I tweeted at her via the More Cowbell Pod Twitter handle. You should follow us. And said, well, actually, we are going through every single episode of SNL and talking about it. And she was like, oh, my gosh, that's so cute. And I was like, ah! And we told her that on the episode 3, we talked about her being Squeaky Fromm and Little Red Riding Hood and all that kind of stuff. So she liked it, which was nice. But anyway, moving on. She opened the door for a shark.
She opened the door. And, okay, so, yeah, Jane Curtin, she thinks it's her husband. Surprise.
It's a shark.
Yeah. And then Candy, hears about it on the radio, and she's like all like, you know, protective. Yeah. And like she hears someone at the door, and she like takes a mallet. Was it a mallet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the radio, they were like, if this guy, you know, it's a shark tries to enter your home, punch it in the nose.
Yes.
No way.
So she's all ready to like punch this shark out. And then she opens the door and, like, whacks him, and it's Garrett Morris.
He's a Jehovah's Witness.
He's not a shark.
He gets knocked out. It's pretty funny. Ended up being, the shark ended up being, like, a classic SNL bit.
It was on when I was growing up. Like, they haven't done it in a while.
Mm-mm.
But it was definitely, like, Tina Fey, Jimmy Fallon. I feel like he came out.
Maybe
like,
during a Weekend Update.
Yeah, just during the Weekend Update.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, like, they'd be like, who's that?
Yeah. Maybe a throwback.
They carried it along.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So then Esther Phillips sings What a Difference a Day Makes. She sounds, Macy Gray sounds a lot
yes.
like her. I was going to say she was obviously first.
Yeah.
She's a cool, unique voice. The next one I liked, I thought it was pretty funny. The first part. The second part was very weird. So it's Chevy Chase with a skull in his hand, doing the whole Shakespeare bit. And it's, you can't really tell what it is at first, but it looks like there's some sort of writing on the skull. And then he drops the skull and realizes, oh, shit, that was my script. Jamie just got it.
Just got that joke.
So, he picks it up in a different order and all that kind of stuff.
I thought it was, like, his dead wife's real skull.
Jesus!
Like, not reality, but I thought that she was, like, it was, like, talking about his beloved.
Oh, my gosh.
Beloved.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But for some reason, in the middle of it, they go into a Polaroid ad,
yes.
which
yeah,
I still can't tell if it was real.
I didn't understand that.
Yeah, so he literally just stops in the middle of it, and him and Candace Bergen talk about a Polaroid camera, and he takes a picture of Candace, and
there's a bunch of pictures of her, and then it's just like, meh.
That was it. And then, I am wrong. I have to admit, I was very wrong before.
When?
Because Candace is a bee in this
part. Oh, yeah, okay.
So,
I knew at one point.
So she's, to end the bit, she says to Chevy, you look like a turkey in that costume. He goes, yeah, well, you look like a wasp. But I'm
So the next one, this is a fake ad.
This is so weird.
This is a weird, like, cross-dressing, I don't even know. Yeah. But remember, it's basically like, remember when your mom would dress you up in her clothes and host tea parties?
And it's a boy.
It's a little boy.
Yeah.
It's like a child. And he's like, and they're like, mom is still only seconds away. You know, he grows up, he's like a man. He's living in, like, his apartment or whatever. And then they're talking about dialing long distance and saying, like, it's the next best thing to being her.
Yeah.
I guess because, like, he wanted to be, like, his mom when he grew up and then long distance. But was long distance not a thing back then? Was it, like, call waiting?
I think it was a play on a real long distance commercial, probably.
Okay.
That was, like, it's the closest thing to being near or
yeah.
something like that. It was funny. It just was...
Yeah, I guess long distance was it became a thing. Because I remember,
yeah.
when I was a kid, there was,
still
call waiting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you had to, it was, beep, beep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
and that commercial about, I think it was a Super Bowl commercial where they say, we had a baby, eats a boy. Do Remember that? Yeah. I think that was a long distance commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We had a baby. It's a boy.
Yeah. Yes, so I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And then it was weekend update. Nothing out of the ordinary here. Surprisingly, they make fun of President Ford. I guess Anwar Sadat was there and was visiting the U.S. And as a parting gift, you know, he gave Mrs. Ford some nice jewelry. And then Mr. Ford sent knee pads and a crash helmet. And then, again, like I mentioned with the CIA, there's been lots of hirings and firings in the White House, which sounds very familiar. and said that Ford is even looking for someone new to fill the position of being his son. I like that one. That was funny. I think it's funny that Chevy knows when a joke doesn't hit.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of does, like, the breaks.
He does, like, a laugh, like, a face.
Or he pretends to pick up the phone, or he shuffles his papers, he's like, I get it. Like, it's not great.
Yeah.
And then another thing they still do on Weekend Update, which I love, I think we've talked about this before, but they do, like, silly, stupid one-liner newsy, not really even newsy jokes. So, for instance, that they said George Washington's dentures had been discovered, confirming, or, you know, they were wood, made of wood.
Yeah.
Famously. Confirming that he did indeed brush his teeth with furniture polish. You know, just stupid, silly stuff. You know, they still do stuff like that.
Like, that's more relatable, I feel like, for any time period. Because it's like, you don't have to really get the political humor.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
They did another ad for Triopinin. And this time I got it. I understood it.
Triopinin.
This basic, if you didn't hear our last episode, it was probably the second episode, I guess.
First or second.
Yeah. So they had, like, this person, they just showed their hands, and they're, like, talking about how, like, you know, arthritis causes pain, and they have, like, this red lights showing, like, the pain spots.
Bing!
Yeah. And then they're like, try our new drug, Triopinin. And, you know, get it?
Triopinin. Yeah, so there was that, and then once again wrapped up with the news for the hard of hearing where Garrett Morris just screams, which I love. It's pretty funny.
Yes. So then Candace did a perfume commercial as Catherine Deneuve.
I forget how to say it already.
Deneuve.
She's French.
Yes, and it's saying how hard it is to be a famous actress who flies first class and like being nice hotels, and then she like lifted her face.
Yeah, so she starts the sketch sideways, like her head is sideways, laying up on top of a bottle of perfume.
Yeah.
And then she's saying, "Oh, it's so hot." I'm not even gonna try to do a French accent, but she said, you know, she says all these things like it's such hardship being a famous actress, and then she lifts her head up, and the perfume bottle is stuck to her face, like she wasn't even trying.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this next one.
Andy Kaufman. We talked about this briefly before we started recording, but we thought this one was pretty funny from him.
It was weird funny. I started to understand his humor. I felt have you ever seen The Man on the Moon?
Not yet. I know.
But I mean, like, it kind of like just tied all the pieces together.
Oh,
like, he really was a strange, funny dude.
Yeah.
Like. So wait, he goes into, wait, what was he, a cannon?
Oh, that's another one. Yeah, he tells a whole long-winded, stupid joke.
Oh, yeah, it makes no sense.
This boy and this girl go to, you know, and they go to the top of a mountain with a cannon, and then the one looks at the other and says, "Where's the cannonball?" It's like, "I don't have it, I thought you had it." And that was literally the joke. And then he goes into impressions.
And then he starts talking, like, he does one impression of a guy.
Archie Bunker.
And then he's like, You're stupid. you're silly, and you're stupid. Like, he's like doing it in this like weird.
Yeah, I don't even know how to explain
accent.
It. Yeah.
Like it was an accent. I don't even know what accent it was. But then he's basically just like doing a terrible impression, but on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then he continued to go like, I forgot.
Thinking about it, that was
like,
so much funnier.
He was just in pain. Like he really didn't forget. Obviously, we talked about this. Also, he was rehearsed, but. He was pretending that he didn't remember his next line, and he kept just like being like a.
He's like, no, what do I? Should we? Can we stop running the
tape? Stop watching the TV.
I promise I will not come back. Like it was, it's so unreal. Like
yeah,
he's very good at that.
Yes.
Pretending, in general. Yeah. But he, like,
he's a master.
He is a master of his craft. So he starts crying, and which to me reminds me of the scene in Step Brothers where they're all just hysterical and John C. Reilly, like, so he starts sobbing like that.
Yeah, and then he it turns it into a song somehow.
Right.
It's like there's a beat with there's a drum out there, and this is the only time he uses like this huge
bongo. Oh yeah, there's a huge bongo standing from the whole time. I'm like, what is he gonna use it for?
I thought it was just for prop, and then he has hiccups, and they turn into a beat. And
it's very Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
And then they do one of those outros to the commercial with a superlative, I don't know if we'd call it superlative, but a description of the person in the audience. It literally just says, nobody worth mentioning.
Yeah.
It's so rude. That's one of my favorites.
So next, Gilda Radner and Candace Bergen had a heart-to-heart kind of talk.
Yeah, it was cute.
Yeah, it was a cute little chat. And then Gilda was like, have you ever had a guy ask you out over the phone? And then he, like, comes to your door and he just, like, goes away.
There's an episode of Parks and Rec where Anne and Leslie are kind of just, like, venting to each other. And Anne is just kind of bummed about her recent breakup. Leslie just mentions all these absolutely insane dates she's been on about, like, guys just not showing up or, like, bringing dinner for other people. Well, anyway, that's what it reminded me of. But, she says that. And then Candace goes, no, but I have had them not call me back. And Gilda goes, oh, this is the best day of my life.
Oh, and then she goes, have you ever been in the car and, like, you notice that your thigh is about, like, two times as big as, like, his thigh?
Oh, yeah. She goes...
I'm like, yes, I can relate.
Right. Gilda Radner is so funny. She's talking about this date she went on, and she gives, like, this just long-winded, like, explanation. She goes, and then you're sitting in the car, and then my friends told me growing up that to show that you're a woman, you have to let him open the door for you. And so she's telling the story about her first date. And she opens the door immediately. You know, she's like, oh, shit. Like, she forgot the one rule.
Yeah.
And so she like, closes it, but it's, like, still kind of open. And so he comes around to open the door, and she goes, it's broken.
Yeah.
Like, what?
She's pretty funny.
Yeah. Then they just talked about the ERA vote, which, again, we couldn't find the actual thing that was voted on or not voted on that week. But there was an actual misconception in the 70s that the ERA would essentially combine men's and women's bathrooms, which was not part of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They were joking.
Yeah. So it was a real thing that, like, crazy
people
were,
wanted that.
No, people were saying that that would happen if this went through.
Okay.
And that was not accurate. So Candace was just, she opened the show, too, talking about that, about how she was like, I'm the first woman. Yay. Even though we still lost the ERA vote this week.
Yeah. Next up was the Albert Brooks film. I wasn't a huge fan of this.
No.
Yeah.
He's still not doing it for me.
Yeah.
I know he's like one of the greats, but.
He was like trying to talk about like how he had him and his girlfriend live with one of her friends from college. And the whole thing was like. He was kind of being like a slime bag, like, ooh, let's all hang out together.
Yeah, so like, he set up three different NBC shows.
Oh.
And that was one of them. I thought it was supposed to be a play on Three's Company, but I don't think Three's Company was on it.
Oh.
Either way.
Yeah.
I did find it funny that the one show was called Black Vet, and you're like, oh, I wonder if he's talking about, he must be talking about a black veteran, which he was, but he was also talking, he's talking about a black veteran who comes back, who becomes a veterinarian. Which is unreal.
Yeah.
But that was, it was, yeah. And then.
Oh, the Kiwi Trappers.
Oh, this is so weird.
This was weird. So it was Belushi and Aykroyd, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were interviewing, who's the.
It's Candace Bergen.
Candace Bergen? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
First of all, the show was called Midnight Probe. Which I did not like.
And they were talking about these, they were Kiwi trappers, talking about, like, how they would, like, go around and, you know,
trap kiwis. Trap kiwis.
And then, like, my favorite part of the whole thing is at the end, and they, like, there's, like, she's like, oh, can I see an example of how you trap these kiwis? And they're, like, they do this, like, circular dance. They're, like, surrounding Candace Bergen, and they're, like, kiwi, 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 kiwi. And they just keep saying kiwi, like, kiwi, kiwi.
Yeah.
And then they, like, eventually, like, throw a bag over her head, and they, like, trap her and, like, carry her around the stage.
I feel like it went on a little too long.
Yeah, I was concerned that she couldn't breathe.
Right.
Like,
yeah. It was very odd. It was very, very Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi.
Yeah.
Like, very them.
Yeah.
It was funny. It was just,
yeah,
like,
it's pretty good.
You know, odd.
Props, yeah.
Yeah. And then the next one was a very, very short and sweet, and it's Michael O'Donoghue making a collect call to an airline company and just saying awful, awful things. He's like, you know, I'm going to throw garbage on your face.
Yes.
And step on you and all these awful things. And then he just says goodbye. And she goes, oh, goodbye and thank you for calling. Because I guess, yeah, you know,
they have to be.
Customer service.
Yeah,
yeah.
To take on.
Got
to
put on the happy face. So yeah. I thought that was pretty funny. Laurie Newman is pretty good at playing a very nice lady.
Yeah.
Coming up,
my favorite,
Muppets on Acid, The Land of Gorge. This one's interesting.
It was,
as they all are.
I don't really like Muppets on Acid. I'm just gonna come out and say it.
That's fine. I'm not offended. So basically, Plubith, our friend, and his like mistress lady.
Oh, and Scrooge was back. I thought he fed him to the
Scred.
Scred
was back, Jamie.
Scrooge. That was a clap. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't an edit.
That's funny. So they are very upset because there are no more Gligs left, which is a Glig essentially is like a little chicken, it looks like. So Scred suggests there are two Gligs left. That's what it is. And they're like, well, what do we do with them? And Scred, not Scrooge. Scred says, oh, why don't we put them in the Planet Museum? And Plubus is like, that's a terrible idea. Let's go to the Mighty Favog. So the Mighty Favog says, all right, you owe me two chickens and a Glig. So he throws in chicken, Glig. Favog says, all right, what's your issue? And Plubus goes, well, there are only two Gligs left. Scred tops him on the shoulder. Goes, two Gligs. One Glig. And then Plubus goes, oh, no. Okay, so we have one Glig left. The Mighty Favog says, oh, we should have said something earlier. He gives him back the Glig. That's really it.
The Favog.
But Muppets.
Muppets. So this next one, Candace.
This next one's unreal.
Yeah. She sits with the ruler of a third world country in the Mideast that she can't pronounce and just basically is... It starts off, like, kind of nice. She's, like, you know, being cordial.
Yeah.
And then she just starts, like, ramming into him and, like, and just, like...
Racial slurs.
Yeah. She, like, cuts his tie and makes it into, like, a what are those things called? The,
Pocket square.
Yeah. That. And she draws a goatee on his face, pours coffee on him, stomps in his foot, you know, all the usual things.
All these awful things. And then, you know, she's trying to essentially make a statement, and then he gets upset. Understandably.
Yeah.
Then she looks at the camera like a reporter and says, a power-mad monarch muzzles the free press. And, you know, it's just supposed to be, like, you know, making a big deal out of something that she instigated herself.
Yeah. So.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so... We're not going to repeat the racial slurs.
Yeah.
But I know it was 1975, but they weren't great.
Yeah. What's going on back then?
I don't... And I don't know. Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, I don't know. One of the last skits was one of my favorites. Was the black perspective.
Oh, geez.
It was Gary Morris and Jane Curtin, or as he introduced Jane Curtin, soul sister Jane Curtin, who is definitely white.
Yes. But pretending to be black?
I don't really know.
Well, the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not like a Rachel Dolezal situation.
Yeah, right. She's not hiding it.
Right.
She's like, just comes out. She's clearly white. And,
yeah.
You know, writes a book, and then at the end of the book, they have the background of the book. It's like, there's a picture, and she...
It's very much not her.
It's not her. It's a black woman. And she's... What did she say to that? Like, she said, like... I don't remember what she said. I can't something remember, like weird.
But yeah, he just assumes all these things. You know, she says she was raised in New York City. He goes, oh, growing up in Harlem, that must have given you street sense. She goes, oh no, I grew up in Midtown Manhattan at 63rd. And he just, it's just interesting because like you, I feel like you would feel like by that point he would start to be like, oh, this isn't right. But the whole time he goes along with it, which I think is, you know, it's even funnier.
Yeah.
She also goes, if you're one of us, you can speak for all of us. It's just so messed up. And then the last sketch was, what did you think about it?
The last sketch was So it was painful to watch because I wanted it to be over.
Right.
It was just literally a screen of Pong. And if you're, like, a millennial and you don't know what Pong is.
Well,
if you're
not beer Pong.
Yeah, not beer Pong. This is Pong from, like...
The 70s.
Yeah. Which I've played before, but I guess a lot of, like, young kids might not know. It's just a game where it's like table tennis,
yeah.
But, like, digitally.
Right,
yeah. So, and then there's just two guys talking in the background about, like, the date or something.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
I'm so sad that our parents... And those kinds of people had to play those kinds of games for entertainment.
Yeah, that's what they did.
It's horrendous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then Esther Phillips comes back and sings I Can Stand a Little Rain, and that was really it, right?
Yeah.
That was the end of the show. I liked it a lot overall.
It was a good episode.
Yeah.
I would say top four.
Candace, I see what you did there. Candace definitely, you know, I can understand why they brought her back. She was like a natural, I thought.
Yeah. Especially, she kind of seemed like one of them.
Yeah, definitely. Like, they seemed friendly with her. Not that they didn't with other people, but...
Yeah.
No, she kind of fit right in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it for episode 4.
But wait, there's more.
There is more. first, want to thank the Digital Learning Lab here at Princeton once again.
Woo.
This is awesome. We just walk right in and record, and it's super handy, dandy, and easy and fun. And thanks to all of our friends, family who've been listening. Super, super appreciate it. We always get texts that are, oh, I just listened for the first time. It's so great. It's so funny. It makes me want to watch old episodes. So that's awesome. Follow us on social.
For sure.
More Cowbell Pod at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Or you can email us.
Oh
my God.
Email us. Our email is
More Cowbell Podcast.
At gmail.com. I'm glad you remembered because I did not.
I went on the Google Drive recently.
Nice. And if you're on iTunes, etc., feel free to rate, review, subscribe. That's how more people see things.
Excellent.
But yeah, so we decided because we keep talking about really, really old stuff, we're going to kind of sprinkle in some new stuff a couple different ways. But the first way is.
Can I shout out our creative director?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. Sorry about that. Our creative director, Lindsay Berman, gave the wonderful idea.
Sup,
Lindsay. She's an avid podcast listener and gave some wonderful ideas. So
today we're going to wrap up with a SNL-themed Would You Rather that Jamie came up with.
Yes.
And so we're going to give you the Would You Rather and then...
Analyzation.
And our picks.
Yes.
And then we want to hear your thoughts, too.
Yes.
We'll do a Twitter poll and stuff.
Yes.
So what is the Would You Rather?
So the Would You Rather is, would you rather have a child that was like a Spartan cheerleader, you know, Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry style, or would you rather work alongside Target lady Kristen Wiig?
That's such a good one.
Like, come on. I've thought about this. I thought about this on the ride over here. And do you want to go first, or do you want?
I'll go first. Okay. My choice is to have a kid that's a Spartan cheerleader, but reasons include it's one of my favorite classic sketches.
So
but
you could laugh at your kids, constantly.
Right? Laughing. It means they support all kinds of sports and different activities. They're coordinated. They're creative.
That's true.
They're athletic.
Yeah.
And they're fashionable. That's my reasoning.
Yes. So I know I phrased it like this, and I don't mean to change things.
It's okay.
But I couldn't decide between the two, so I had to phrase it in my head. I was like, because I couldn't pick, I was like, which would I rather be? Spartan cheerleader, or like I know I changed it just now, but a Spartan cheerleader, or would I rather be Target Lady? And I decided that I'd rather be Spartan cheerleaders.
I wish you could see the seriousness on her face.
It was a thought out process.
Sure.
So I'd rather Target Lady. I love, but like the Spartan cheerleaders, you can be those kind of kids in high school that were like made fun of a little bit, but also like don't care.
Right.
So like you could be those kids that like. You know, there's, like, the cool football jock, and he, like, pushes you down into the garbage, and you're, like...
that you're, like, definitely happens in real life.
Yeah. And, like, and then, like, you'd be, like, okay. Or something, like, that's let's great. Let's go. Man. Thanks for the push. Love it. Whereas, like, Target
Lady... You're so strong.
Yeah. Love you. Target Lady might... If I was to be her... If I was to be Target Lady, I would get very self-frustrated.
Sure.
Because... Oh, all right. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You did it. Maddie just did a little...
the little dance she does, which is very excited.
Happy dance.
Yeah.
It's
a good answer.
So that's my roundabout answer.
All right. I'll take it. It's good for the first one, I hope.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So we want to know your answers to either the first question or the one Jamie just made up on her own.
Sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. And that's going to do it for us this week.
Yeah.
So with that, we will say, if you've got a fever...
The only cure
is more cowbell.
Yay!